Hello and welcome to the second English Xbox Mojo episode. My name is Thomas and I'm running Xbox Mojo as a German Xbox podcast since November 2019. In November 2021, I started the English branch because I'll have English guests. In this episode, I'm talking about several games I've played over the past few weeks, like Forza Horizon 5, Scarlet Nexus, or Back for Blood. While I've primarily played Halo Infinite Multiplayer beta for the past week and loved it, in this episode I want to talk about Forza Horizon 5. This game had the biggest launch in Xbox history with over 10 million players, well deserved. Forza Horizon 5 launched on November 9th with early access beginning a few days prior on November 5th. So 10 million players in this short time are outstanding. The ratings are excellent and Metacritic is around 92. It is currently the highest rated AAA game of the year across all platforms. I've been playing Forza Horizon 5 since November the 4th as I changed the console location to New Zealand, and thanks to the magic of time zones I was able to play earlier. Within a few days I was playing through the game. I have around 25 hours on the clock now. I discovered all 578 streets, 230 of the 250 signs destroyed, and I found all 14 barns. And I thought that I had bought all the houses, but I am still missing one that cost 5 million credits, and at the moment I only have around 4.2 million. I finished the campaign, so I set up all the festival locations and did the necessary missions and most other story missions, but I've had enough of the game for now. It's a Forza Horizon game, and whoever likes the predecessors will enjoy this game too, but anyone who hoped that the Horizon formula would change entirely and that there would be significant changes in content must hope for one of the successors. You still set up outposts, go on photo tours, drive roads or cross-country races, destroy experience and fast travel signs, and search for cars hidden in barns. Forza Horizon reigns Forza Horizon with all its advantages and disadvantages. The main reason I like Forza Horizon so much is Mexico. Mexico is a much more exciting location than Great Britain. The game world is so wonderfully varied that it's a pleasure to discover every corner. From volcanoes to the beach, from the jungle to the desert, or drive along the coast until you can find pretty Mexican cities. There are also huge fields that visually remind me of Forza Horizon 2. In between, you can also explore massive temples, and it all looks fantastic. Although the map is more significant than the previous one, it is quickly familiar. When I destroyed almost all the travel signs, I started to use fast travel and celebrated the loading times. For the first time in the series, fast travel is high speed, with a waiting time of maybe 2 or 3 seconds. That makes collecting and discovering much, much easier. The expeditions are a good innovation. The story sends you to a defined area, and there you have to do several small tasks, such as finding objects or taking water samples. Unfortunately, there are only a few of them. I liked the story mode more than its predecessor. This time it is even an achievement if you have completed the story and then unlocked the Hall of Fame and thus the endgame. Visually, the game ultimately picked me up. Sometimes the optics make you kneel, especially when the lightning mood is correct or the weather system turns up. There are different weather effects on times of days and so on. You get to see so many beautiful panoramas, and the foresight is enormous. I played in performance mode mainly at 60 FPS and still thought it was beautiful. The game also kept the frame rate 95% of the time. Strangely, I once had a visible stutter, actually so rare that I almost didn't mention it here. If you have a good TV and want to show your friends what your new Xbox Series X can do, you have a suitable game here. The main criticism for me is the popping up environment, such as grasses and other vegetations. That annoyed me a bit. The music and radio stations are a bit worse than with the predecessor, and sadly, there is still no option to include your own MP3 songs. In summary, the old formula for success remains. Just one more race, just one more, and then all of a sudden it is 2 a.m. Forza Horizon 5 is among the best the genre offers, and it's a racing game for everyone. Without great complexity or annoying realism, explore a beautiful world in fast cars and have a lot of fun. The only thing I wonder is why it doesn't bother me like that after 25 hours. Maybe I've just played too many Forza Horizons. At the latest, I will happily revisit Mexico with the upcoming expansions. If you loved the old Forza Horizons, you could exit it without hesitation. If you want to try Forza Horizon for the first time, you won't find a better opportunity. It's one of the best games of 2021. Simple as that. And because of this summary, it might not be evident that the Game Awards nominations for 2021 have been revealed without nominating Forza Horizon 5. The title is being recognized in other categories, but that one of the most highly rated game of the year was nowhere to be seen on the shortlist of the Game of the Year nominations. That is really strange. A few days ago, Jess Corden wrote an article about it, and I quote, "The Game Awards snub of Forza Horizon 5 is a disservice to the entire game industry. I may not agree with Jess on all the things, but I think that if the Game Awards want to be something like the Golden Globes or the Academy Awards, they should also consider the entire calendar year. And don't just draw the line at the beginning middle of November. As a result, the awards should be giving out early next year. This is how it's done if you want to be taken seriously as an award event. Currently, the focus is on the sale of advertisement, and before Christmas, you can get better prices in this regard. New announcements are the reason people tune in. The awards are just annoying accessories. You can also tell that some are awarded during commercial breaks. Jeff Keighley should be honest with himself about this. The Game Awards are purely a marketing event, not a serious award event. First, let me say that just because I think Forza should have been nominated too, I am not discrediting the other nominees. However, I would have selected Returnal instead of Ratchet & Clank, for example, but which game have been nominated? Deathloop, It Takes Two, Metroid Red, Psychonauts 2, Ratchet & Clank A Rift Apart, and Resident Evil Village. I played mostly all of these games and even played them through, besides It Takes Two. Let's talk about Ratchet & Clank. It was a game with a particular hype due to its graphical strengths, but it quickly disappeared after its release. Who is still talking about the game today? And please don't get me wrong, it's a good game and a perfect Ratchet & Clank game. Technically, outstanding and playfully entertaining. But the game of the year? The series has been playing similarly for 19 years and every part looked good in its time, but in the same way, no representative of the series has ever been a serious Game of the Year challenger. Why should it be any different now? I also find it extremely short, and somehow after 14 hours I got my platinum. For me, Ratchet is just more of the same on a reasonable level. The same could be said for Forza Horizon 5, but Forza had more players, better ratings, and more content. This year, if a Sony title deserved a nomination, it would be Returnal, because Returnal offered a fresh idea. It was the first AAA roguelike and offered a dense sci-fi atmosphere with a fantastic soundscape. I liked Resident Evil Village. It plays a lot more like an action game than its predecessors and for a long time felt like Resident Evil 4 from the first-person perspective. Visually, the game appealed to me as much as the atmosphere, and one location is so scary and intense that I thought I was playing Silent Hill instead of Resident Evil. So the developers dared to do something, even if most bosses looked more like Bond villains or something. And as much as I liked the game, I never thought of Game of the Year in that context. One of the most creative games of the year was It Takes Two, which I understand the nomination clearly. In the absence of a co-op partner, I could only play the first levels. And as positively as the fresh idea surprised me, I am amazed that the spark never jumped. I like the genre so much, and that's precisely why it's not surprising that for me, Psychonauts 2 is one of the best games of the year. Art style, sound, creative level design, a great story that captures serious and sad topics and got a lot of humorous scenes. How alcohol addiction is dealt with is reminiscent of good Pixar films where you only notice what serious issues are addressed afterward. I was delighted with the success of Metroid Dread as I am a fan of the series. On the one hand, Nintendo managed to appeal to old fans and to present a good 2D Metroid, which however was modernized in terms of narration and controls at the same time. It's the best Switch game of the year, so a nomination was kind of logical. At Deathloop, I originally wanted to wait for the Game Pass version in September 2022. Then the ratings and press coverage were so good that I became weak. It just appealed to me to play a new game from Arcane Leon, which has been part of Microsoft since the Bethesda takeover. After the first few hours, I was not yet aware of where I was going. The first 2 or 3 hours are tutorial after tutorial, and the developers are constantly explaining new game mechanics. Almost a bit overwhelming and above all bulky. But shortly afterward, it clicked on me, and from then on, I loved the game. For me, after finishing it, it's one of the best games of the year. The first 2/3 of the game is the best gameplay for the year. The art style, sound, the narration, the whole style, the different mechanics, it all fits. The enthusiasm for me subsided a little towards the end because some of the gameplay was too worn out. I also find the resolution of the story weak. If it hadn't been for all of this, it would be the game of the year for me. There are enough arguments for why they could be Game of the Year for most games that I mentioned here, and I hope it won't be Ratchet because it's a boring game among the nominees. I wouldn't be surprised if It Takes Two wins because it went down well with people and I'd have to flip a coin to decide between Deathloop and Psychonauts. But enough talked about the awards. I want to take the opportunity to talk about two games that were released a few weeks ago and are still available in Game Pass. On one hand, there is Scarlet Nexus. At the beginning of the game, you decide whether to play the male Yuito Sumeragi or the female Kasane Randall. This decision has far-reaching consequences as you experience the story from the respective perspective and meet other companions and the battles change. To enjoy the whole package, you would have to play the game with both characters. As in the demo, I choose Yuito because I liked hand-to-hand combat with the sword and the combat system is also what primarily interested me and gave me access to this anime adventure. The game is an action role-playing game with damn exciting and fun battles where you line up various combinations and powers. Almost felt I was in a Platinum Games game at times. Because of this focus, people who usually avoid JRPGs are welcome to look here. The fight usually occur in linear missions where the aim is to beat the monsters. A party with a maximum of 3 active members and 2 passive members is available for this, but it's fun to do various combos with the sword, defeat opponents with a jump in the air like Dante from Devil May Cry, or throw heavy objects like statues or cars at them using telekinesis. Strikes can be charged, quick time events can increase attacks, and even finishing moves are included. If you crack the combo against each other like crazy, a unique bar fills up, and when this is full, you can strike particularly hard for a limited time, very helpful in boss fights. Your party members are fighting independently, but you can borrow special attacks from them and temporarily combine them with your attacks, so you can unmask invisible opponents at once or a couple of specific elemental abilities with your melee attack. And since every team member has different skills depending on the composition, there are other possible combinations which are just great and provide the necessary variety. Scarlet Nexus takes place in a futuristic world where the population and government are neurally networked. You are cadets of the academy who fight against monsters. The general sci-fi topics are interesting, but the characters I've seen so far correspond to various enemy clichés, and you may or may not like that. Similar to the Tales of Sirius, character conversations increase the bonds between the team's members and are shown here in comic sequences. It may seem old-fashioned to one or the other, I liked it to loosen up. And since you can skip all dialogues, even players who are primarily interested in the fights should never really feel disturbed. Technically, it's okay. It runs smoothly and I like the cel-shaded look, and really the soundtrack is a great one too. Sure, it's not a next-gen experience, but it's good enough. Since I feel so deeply in love with the combat system, I will play it through. So far, it has seemed like a positive surprise for me, even if I can't say yet whether my enthusiasm can be held until the end. The final topic of this broadcast is Back 4 Blood. Valve released with Left 4 Dead 1 and 2, a multiplayer survival co-op first-person shooter in 2008 and 2009. These games quickly becoming a cult hit. It's just fun to slice your way through hordes of zombies together with friends. Unfortunately, the series has been quiet since then. In 2011, the developer started their own business as Turtle Rock Studios, and the studio was still known as Valve South when implementing D2 Left 4 Dead. The first independent project was Evolve in 2015, and it was an asymmetrical multiplayer game with 5 players, one player taking on the role of the monster and is chasing the others. Unfortunately, the game flopped, so the developer sat down on a spiritual Left 4 Dead successor, which is Back 4 Blood. Thanks to crossplay, you can team up for battle across platforms on PC, PlayStation and Xbox, so I hope the game will have a longer lifespan. In addition, the developers are also planning expansions. Back 4 Blood does not reinvent the genre, but comes primarily as a revamped and modern version of Left 4 Dead 2. But this primary old-school approach didn't bother me, as it's still fun to beat up the zombie hordes. Since it's primarily a co-op game, it appeals to me a lot more than another battle royale. The levels are tubular, and in principle you always have to go to the safe house alive as a group of a maximum of 4 people, but I admit that this initial euphoria didn't even carry me through the entire campaign because Of course, it is a very repetitive process and the levels are repeated. So the higher levels of difficulty don't always help. The possibility of using a deck of cards to select and change the character traits before the start of the game brought a bit of fresh air. For example, faster reloading, a larger ammunition supply, or better healing. You also collect in-game currency to unlock some perks permanently. The campaign is divided into 4 acts and the levels are concise. So overall, the one-time playthrough should be very quick. If you don't have friends who also play Back 4 Blood, you can of course play with randoms or rely on bots, but don't expect anything significant from bots. But I wanted to end the campaign, so I played with randoms, because only in multiplayer with real people are there achievements to get. And in the meantime, I thought several times that I wouldn't beat the game because the groups were often flawed, especially the first chapter was still annoying regarding the group search, because everyone who only tests it logically arrives in the first chapter. It was then sometimes annoying that those who did not play the game as a co-op game tried a la Rambo to kill all the zombies and then got mad when that didn't work out and left the game. Or the British couple who wasn't aware that all participants heard their party chat. The attempt at flirting and comments were funny to listen to, I must admit. In later chapters, the difficulty level increased so much that I sometimes thought I could not manage the game. In one of the last missions to evacuate a villa, a teammate saved me alone. What an MVP. I was taken off in the middle of this level and then virtually cheered him up, and somehow he made it. I then played the following levels with him, only so that we would fail when you had to flee through gates that could be opened manually, chased by hordes of enemies who came from the front, back and everywhere. I tried the level several times, and then when I was halfway through it with bots, two or three randoms came into my game session and we made it on the first try. Then again to fail with the final boss a little later. But then I made it with the next group. It was an up and down, but in places the game had pegged me. I was happy when I played with good groups, and I remember an Irish group communicating with a headset, which was an excellent game experience. So I enjoyed this co-op gameplay quite a bit. I had an incredible multiplayer experience in the end, even if I haven't had any need to try out the higher difficult settings. The end of the game is predestined for expansions of the game, so I hope that it will be successful enough to be supplied with many DLCs and that the developers will also take on the criticism and integrate some improvements. If you like Left 4 Dead, you won't go wrong here. You will even celebrate it thanks to the nostalgia trip. The guns feel good and it's fun, and that's important for a shooter. Somehow a perfect Game Pass title, because I wouldn't have bought it outright. That should have been it for this week. Thank you for listening. Follow me on Twitter at XboxMojo. The future is bright and the mojo is coming back. Until next time, your Thomas.